This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store with the new Squarespace Commerce feature. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK3.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 89, You Can't Create a Stepford Boyfriend. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a special deal on Voyager and Enterprise DVDs, the packaging and menus for Enterprise's Season 1 Blu-ray release, new projects by Trek actors, Chris Pine, Male Star of the Year, Patrick Stewart's worthy cause, and a look ahead to the third JJ film. Then in the feature, we're joined by Matthew Rushing, Tristan Riddell, and a handful of Shamrocks to discuss the Voyager episodes, Fairhaven, and Spirit Folk. So let's step into the Ready Room. Well, hello there, Char. It's very lovely to have you with me this week. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Yeah, happy St. Patrick's Day. Of course, for me, it was yesterday, as it's now Monday here, but I know it's St. Patrick's Day for you over there in the United States. And I, some of my friends had green beer yesterday, and I thought about putting a little bit of green food coloring in my sake last night, but in the end, I decided to just stick with it and have it straight.
Very good. I probably should have had some green tea, and instead I'm doing my usual Egyptian licorice and mint tea. But mint is green.
I did have some spinach with dinner last night. Now that's green. Does that count?
I think so.
All right.
Yes.
Good.
And
I was there.
You were all right. Yeah.
I fulfilled my duty. Yes. Well, let's go ahead and jump into our Star Trek news this week. And it's been a while since we've had to do this on The Ready Room, but we have to start out with a bit of a sad note.
Yeah.
We have lost another Star Trek actor, and this is Malachi Throne. He was a recurring actor on Star Trek going all the way back to the very, very beginning of Star Trek, where he played the voice of the Keeper in The Cage, the original unaired pilot of TOS. He also played Commodore Jose Mendez in The Menagerie. He played the Romulan Senator Pardek in Unification. And most recently, he played the role of a Klingon named Koro in the New Voyages Phase 2 episode In Harm's Way. And sadly, he passed away on March 13th at the age of 84.
Yes. That's kind of even though it's not a regular one, it's always sad when you lose somebody who was there from the very beginning, because they are ever so slowly passing us by, and another one gone. So
it reminds you of how long Star Trek has been around. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Throne went all the way back to The Cage, and even though he only appeared in these particular episodes, I mean, these are some of the most iconic episodes of Star Trek.
I agree.
The Cage, The Menagerie, Unification.
Yeah, these are biggies.
So he played a very important role in some of the most loved stories to Star Trek fans. So we're really sad to see him go, and really appreciate his contribution to Star Trek and helping bring those stories to us.
Absolutely. Now, in slightly happier news, Chris Pine is getting an award.
Yeah, he is. He is apparently being named the Male Star of the Year Award. Now, I usually don't keep up with these awards, probably maybe because I'm a little more disconnected from the American media there. So what can you tell me about Chris Pine, Male Star of the Year?
Well, apparently, his hotness is getting an award for being a hot male star by the National Association of Theater Owners, or, and I love the abbreviation, NATO.
NATO.
NATO is awarding Chris Pine an award. You gotta love that. They're gonna do this on April 18th in Las Vegas. They're going to have, you know, kind of a nice big gala for the whole thing. And this is going to happen at CinemaCon, which I did not even realize was a thing until I read this. But it happens.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm picturing this National Association of Theater Owners. They own the theater. They get to see all the movies. I have this picture of them all sitting together in a room. Like, okay, so who's the hottest guy this year?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, is this just the lady theater owners voting on this? Are the guys in on this too?
I don't know. It's an interesting. Of course, I've heard of NATO. But
yeah, this is
apparently not
what
this particular NATO. It's not the NATO I usually think of.
Right. And I wonder, how do they come up with who wins? I mean, what are the criteria here that they're judging on?
I don't know. Is this where white smoke comes out of the theater until they have chosen a male star of the year?
I think so, yes.
The problem for me, and the reason I never even thought about Chris Pine being male star of the year, is that recently, every time he appears somewhere, he's alongside Zoe Saldana. And so I don't even notice that he's there.
That's right, because your eyes are all on Zoe. Understandably.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. Now, I got to admit, I'm probably looking a little more at Chris Pine than you are. And he is a very attractive, good-looking guy, even in glasses. Because he and Zoe hosted the SciTech Awards a couple months ago, and he was looking pretty hot. Yes, he was.
Now, Zachary Quinto likes to wear glasses quite often in photos. How do you compare Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto in glasses
as a
woman?
They kind of rock them in their own unique way, and so it's just a matter of preference, I think. Tough call. I may have to go with Chris Pine just because I kind of dig the hair.
All right. I was going to say, I think after the show, you might just go get some photos, do a little in-depth research, and then get back to me on that.
A lot of research. In-depth research. I'll do that.
Well, while we're talking about Star Trek actors, here's another important issue that Sir Patrick Stewart is taking a stance on, and he is calling on men to end violence against women.
Yeah, and this is incredible. I mean, it's not very often you have someone with the stature of Sir Patrick Stewart speaking on something this hard-hitting of a topic, and he's not just saying, hey, guys, this is bad, stop it, and you know, slap on the wrist and all that. No, he's really serious about this because he has personal experience. And I think this is the best thing you can do after going through some kind of a trauma where he witnessed abuse on his mother and spoke about it at the launch of the Ring the Bell campaign. And this happened on March 8th at the UN Hotel in New York City. And they're really out there to spread this message, and he's a very important part of it.
It's wonderful when someone, like you say, of his stature and someone that people respect so greatly and view as, I think, the quintessential man. When you look at Patrick Stewart, you know, you see he's very much a man. He's very intelligent. He's someone that commands your respect. And I'm not even talking about Captain Picard, who obviously commands respect of the crew, but Patrick Stewart himself.
Right. Well, he's very accomplished.
Right. I mean, he's a man who, when you're in his presence or you're watching him, you feel you're in his presence. He really commands your respect and attention. And so
absolutely,
he's a wonderful person to champion this. You know, he talks about personal experience, saying that I knew exactly when to open a door and insert myself between my father's fist and my mother's body. And,
right. I mean, imagine as a child doing that. What you learned from that.
It really changes your life. You know, I mean, I have that experience myself, not with my father and my mother, but with my stepfather and my mother. My stepfather was very abusive to her and to me. And I think it helped me in terms of my development, as terrible as it was, to learn that that's not acceptable. You know, it's right. Like indirectly helped shape me as who I am, mm-hmm. as a man. And not everyone has that experience. Luckily, as a child, you don't want to have that experience. But it does mean that, you know, this does become a problem in the world where often men don't know how to show respect towards women. And it's great that Patrick Stewart is drawing attention to it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, you're speaking about your own experience. I think everybody knows somebody where this affects them. So I think it's fantastic that he's speaking out. And like you said, he commands people's attention. You will listen to him and take away something from that. Yeah. Pay attention to it. Take it seriously.
Yeah. So this speech that he gave already happened, but of course I would expect to see a continuation of this message from him.
I would think so. Yes.
And so that's something to watch for. And I'm glad Star Trek actors can make a difference in
Absolutely.
The world in that way.
Yeah. This won't be the last we see of him on this. He's actually a very outspoken feminist of all things. He did the photo campaign not too long ago in England. I believe was he wearing a dress or something like that, or just something?
I don't remember that one. Yeah.
It was very interesting. And it said, basically, I am a feminist. And not many men would open up to that because they just think it's the stereotypical bra burning women, you know, wanting to be you know, liberal and all that. There's a lot more to feminism when you actually study it and learn what it really is about. And so
right. Yeah.
He's going to champion topics like this from forever.
Yeah. And that's wonderful. So moving into more purely Star Trek news here, of course, all the news these days about releases has mostly been about The Next Generation, speaking mm-hmm. of Patrick Stewart, being released on Blu-ray, and Enterprise is now coming out on Blu-ray as well. And, you know, as I've learned from some of our followers on Facebook, some people don't want Blu-ray. Some people don't have a Blu-ray player, and some people, for some reason, seem to have great animosity about the suggestion that people might buy Blu-ray players. I'm not sure what that's about. But nevertheless, many people still love DVDs. And I think DVDs will continue to be around for a few more years. And a lot of fans don't yet have all of the Star Trek series on DVD because they've been very pricey. For Voyager fans, like yourself, of course, doing To the Journey, and we're going to talk about Voyager today in the feature. Amazon has a great opportunity for you to save on your Voyager DVDs and build your collection.
Yeah, this is a fantastic opportunity where if you're missing a season or two, or even if you don't have any of them, now is the time. They're 51% off on Amazon. And also, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you can watch the episodes for free on Amazon Instant Video. And I am an Amazon Prime member. I might just check this out of curiosity. I mean, I usually watch my Voyager on Netflix, but hey, why not? It's free. Check it out. And meanwhile, I might be picking up some Voyager DVDs as well.
Yeah, I like having the DVDs because what I do with mine is I rip all my DVDs into the computer. I put them in iTunes. Mm-hmm. I can make sure that I have very high quality conversions of them. And then I have an Apple TV in the studio and in the living room, and I can just easily pull up whatever I want. Of course, I don't have access to Netflix over here. I do have Hulu, but we only have the original series and Enterprise there. So, So I love having the DVDs. Plus, you know, what I love about DVD sets most of all is the special feature disc and being able to get a lot of that behind the scenes information about the series from the creatives. And that's something that you don't get on Netflix.
Absolutely. That is something that's actually the reason why I buy DVDs, is for those kind of features. I love that stuff. And also,
and I'm like, I mean, that with all movies too.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I mean, yeah, DVDs are going to be around for a little while longer, and it's going to take a little while to get Voyager on Blu-ray too. So I don't think this is a completely pointless thing to do. I mean, get your Voyager on DVD. It's going to take a while for the Blu-rays to come out. Have access.
So looking at the prices here, the usual list price on a Voyager set is $69.98 at Amazon. And this week, as they're doing this 51% off sale, you can pick up each season of Voyager for $33.99, which I think is an excellent deal.
Yes.
Or you can get the complete Voyager series, all seven seasons in one package. They are individual seasons, but they kind of wrap them together as one mm-hmm. package. That's $287.18, which is a big number, but if you break it down, the list price on that is $529.98.
Yeah.
And now that's how I got my Voyager sets. Actually, I ordered them back in 2006 as this full series set. And at that time, I think I even got a better deal than that. I think I paid like $228 for them.
Oh, wow.
Something like
you got lucky then.
Yeah.
Because I've always had the sticker shock with Star Trek DVDs. Yeah. They are very pricey.
They really are. They're ridiculously pricey. But
yes,
these days,
are.
You are starting to find them for much more reasonable prices like this. So.
Yeah. This is the time to get them. It's not going to get much better than this.
In addition to Voyager, they are also putting the Enterprise DVD sets at 51% off. Now, this one would be a little bit of a more questionable purchase for me if you love Enterprise, just because the Blu-ray set is coming out in less than 2 weeks, which we're going to talk about in just a moment.
Yeah.
During the sale, the Enterprise sets are $33.99 like Voyager. Now, Enterprise Season 1 on Blu-ray is currently selling for $77.86 on Amazon. So, yeah, I mean, it's double.
Price difference.
But there are going to be a lot of new special features.
Yes,
as well
are.
As the HD transfers.
Yeah, it will be worth it. But like you said, a lot of people are not totally immersed in Blu-ray just yet. They're not ready for it. So here's a chance to get some Enterprise on DVD, too. I don't know. But I'm excited about the Enterprise Blu-rays because, as I said earlier, I love special features. I know they're doing all sorts of commentaries for these things. And the artwork looks fantastic.
Oh, the artwork is really fantastic. TrekCore has some photos that they've shot. I believe they already have a copy of Season 1. And they've shot some very close-up images of the packaging. You remember when they first released like those four options that they were looking at?
Oh, yeah. And you voted on which one was going to make it.
Yeah, and they were all terrible. And it turns out they didn't use any of them after they saw fan reaction, I think. And they ended up going with a stock image of the crew walking in their kind of gold bronze colored spacesuits, which is an image that's been around for a long time. It's one of the Season 1 stock promo shots.
Mm-hmm. But it looks great.
I mean, it looked good to start with. But now when you see what they've done, they have created it's like an embossed image of the entire crew, and it has a metallic finish. And as TrekCore says, you can't really do it justice in a photograph, but even the photos that they have taken, you can tell that this is actually some very nice packaging.
Yeah, it looks pretty sleek, and I can't wait to see it in person. Also, the screenshots that they show for the menu, those look pretty interesting as well. So I would go to TrekCore if you haven't seen these already and check them out. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, they really do. And I can't wait to see. You know, just a few days ago, my new view screen was installed in the living room. It's, of course, it's 47 inches because I'm going to watch Star Trek on it. But it's a really beautiful 3D, you know, full high-def screen. And I can't wait to see these Enterprise menus on that screen because just in the still shots, I can tell that some incredible work has gone into creating these menus. You know, for people who think that CBS is just throwing Enterprise out there on Blu-ray because they have it and it was shot in HD in the first place, so there's no remastering that needs to be done, I really don't think that's the case. It really feels like they're trying to do justice to Enterprise in the same way that they've done justice to the Next Generation.
I agree. I feel like they're giving this a lot of attention to detail. They're not just slapping it out and expecting us to buy it again for the sake of having it. You're actually going to get some good stuff in here.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I pre-ordered mine way back when it was first released. I knew the price would come down, so I went ahead and pre-ordered it because they give you the lowest price. I think when I pre-ordered it, it was like $98 still at that point. The list price is $119.99. It's down to $77.86 right now, and which makes me think that it's in Walmart's hands, because anytime I see a price that ends in 86, that means that someone is price matching Walmart.
Okay.
Because I've just noticed that Walmart likes to end their prices with 86, or at least they did back when I lived in the States.
We should get 86 Walmart.
So we'll see. You know, with the TNG season 1 and 2 Blu-rays, right before release, they've dropped that price down into the low 60s, and then it's gone back up. So I'm hoping that this is going to drop down to about $62, $64 the week of release. So if you're looking to get these Enterprise Blu-rays, keep your eye on Amazon. If you're okay with $77.86, go ahead and pre-order. And if you're not, keep your eye on it around release time, and you might get a really good deal on it.
Yeah, I've noticed that's definitely the time to get them.
Yeah. And that release date, by the way, is March 26th. So we have less than 2 weeks to go now.
Yeah. Coming right up.
So, Char, let's take a break from news for a moment and tell everyone about our sponsor, Squarespace. Now, as everyone who listens to The Ready Room knows by now, Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create professional websites, blogs, portfolios. And with this new commerce feature that they have out, you can even easily set up an online store now, which is something that, as I've discussed on here before, I've had to do in the past, and I'm still planning to do for a few things right now. So I'm very happy about this feature. But Char, now you have taken advantage of the offer that Squarespace has made to Trek FM listeners, and you've moved your Oh the Profanity blog over to Squarespace. So as you've been playing with it for a bit, setting up your site, you know, moving your blog and everything going, tell us, what are some of the features of Squarespace that you have found most useful and most impressive?
I think the one thing that I was most impressed with was when I was putting my portfolio together. And I've got collections of images for things like my photography, news pages I have designed, graphics that I've designed, just kind of a little collection of things here and there that I've done work-wise. And the hardest part was transferring the images over from my PC, saving them and bringing them over. As soon as I had them on my Mac, I dragged, dropped, and Squarespace lined them up into just total perfection, and I was done with, I don't know, probably 50 images total. Made them look fantastic. You can use the Lightbox feature to open it up and see a full version, because I have little thumbnail galleries, and then you click it and you see the full version to see more detail. Very fast, very easy. That was one of the things that won me over the most.
Yeah, the image treatment on Squarespace is great. You mentioned the thumbnail view. They have quite a few different views. They have a grid view. They have a slideshow view.
Mm-hmm.
They have many different ways for you to display your images. And you just drop down a little image gallery module onto the page, and you can choose the type. And you can even switch it later. You know, if you do a slideshow and you decide you want a grid, it's just
Absolutely.
A little selection you make.
I did that.
When you upload an image to Squarespace, the system actually converts it to 7 different sizes. And then the system very intelligently uses those different sizes throughout your site, depending on how you're presenting your image. So you don't even have to think about creating all these different versions of your image. Squarespace does it all for you. It's an enormous time saver. And they even give you a tool to specify in a specific situation where the focal point of an image is. So if an image is going to be cropped, you can make sure that the crop looks nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. And as someone who has manually gone and made the thumbnails myself and different varying image sizes, that is such a huge time saver.
It Yeah, it is. As you and I are both designers, and we've both had to do this, and we know firsthand how much work is involved in that. And it's one of my favorite features of Squarespace as
Yeah.
well.
It's such a time saver. I mean, it could take hours depending on how many images you have, and it can just break it down into minutes.
Yeah, definitely. It can be entire days spent just prepping images for a larger
Yeah.
website. Let's talk about a few of the other key features of Squarespace. As you discussed already, drag and drop. It's 100% drag and drop. It's a wonderful system. They call it Layout Engine. You use blocks to build your pages. It takes all of that kind of techie geek aspect of using a tool like Dreamweaver to build a website out of the equation, and it lets you focus on your design and your content. There are over 300 fonts built into Squarespace, so you can really make your site unique. If you're a typophile like I am, you can make sure that your site looks beautiful and is easy to read. If you're an Adobe Creative Cloud user and you have access to Typekit, there's Typekit integration built directly into Squarespace. You can pull in your sets from Typekit and use them on your site very easily. And now, Shar, you and I are both really big into social media. We like to share our thoughts on Twitter and Facebook and various places, Instagram as well. I like to take photos of my Kirk Bear and share that with everyone. And
indeed,
Squarespace has some of the best mobile and social media integration that I have seen.
Absolutely. You can automatically, say if you want to have a blog post, automatically go to your Facebook page, as I have for my personal website, Oh the Profanity. You just, you tell it to do it and it takes it care of it for you. You can do the same with Twitter and Tumblr, pretty much whatever you like. I mean, they've got everything. Even Google Plus, which nobody uses anymore. You can do it.
I know, right? Yeah, the Facebook feature is really cool. The fact that you can actually share a page from your Squarespace site directly onto your Facebook page. They're
right.
actually tied together, and you can just go in Facebook and you can choose to share a Squarespace site, and you can just tell it which page you want from that site, and it pulls it right in. It's fantastic for marketing. I mean, for your personal branding, if you're into that, it's great. And if you're a business and you want to share content from your website with your customers, there's really no easier way to do it than that.
Yeah, easy. And again, a time saver, because I do, sometimes a big bulk of what I'm doing in my job is sharing posts or photos or whatnot on social media. It takes time to put that together on each network and make it look right.
It does. It does. And but it's very easy here. And Twitter, you could auto tweet. If you post a new blog entry, if you post new content on your business site, you can set it up to automatically tweet that content out as well for promotion. And that's really important, because social media marketing is something that you can't dispense with it these days. If you're a business and you're a marketer, you really need to be promoting in social media, but it's really time consuming.
Yes.
And so tools like you have here in Squarespace can really help you market your business more effectively. The last feature we should tell everyone about is the new commerce feature, which I mentioned at the beginning. And I'm very excited about this, and I think everyone else will be as well. It can just be a real pain to set up an online store, especially if you're an individual and you want to sell some of your crafts, some of your artwork. The new Squarespace commerce system, they have an agreement with Stripe. They've integrated there so you can process credit cards, take payments, process orders, handle all of this directly from your Squarespace site. It's all integrated. You can sell physical items, digital goods. You can do coupon codes, and it's really a very simple way that you can get up and running in just a few minutes. So we would like to invite you to go check out Squarespace. You can try it free for 14 days at no cost. They don't even ask you for a credit card because they know that you're going to love the system just like we do. Mm-hmm. And you can even import your existing site from WordPress, from other systems. You can import it. You can see what it's going to look like. You can play with all the fantastic tools at Squarespace. And it's really inexpensive. So let's tell everyone about the pricing real quick. If you want this full-blown commerce feature, that's just $24 per month. Below that, you can get the unlimited package minus the commerce features for just $16 per month. Or you can get, for $8 a month, the regular package, which probably gives most people everything they want. So we'd like to invite you to go try it out. You can go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK3 for March. That's offer code TREK3. And you can get 10% off your lifetime purchase at Squarespace. But you don't have to pay up front. You just go sign up. You get a 14-day free trial. They don't even ask you for a credit card. You get access to all the tools in Squarespace. And you can build out your site. You can even import your site from WordPress or other blogging platforms. You'll see exactly what it looks like. And then after 14 days, if you love it, and we know you will, you just sign up. Use offer code TREK3, and you'll be supporting our sponsor and helping us bring all this programming to you at the same time.
Well, why don't we jump back into Star Trek? Because I've been noticing a lot of Trek actors take on just a whole myriad of projects. I don't know, you know, if you know what Scott Bakula has been up to, but this guy has been busy. I read a press release not that long ago where he's got several things going on, actually. He's going to play the husband of a real-life bounty hunter slash bail bondswoman. Her name is Mackenzie Green, played by Gina Davis for a pilot for TNT. It's currently not named, so we'll have to follow up on it, but he's shooting that. He's going to be on an episode of 2 1/2 Men. He's going to be in Steven Soderbergh's Behind the Candelabra and playing the man who introduces Liberace to his longtime lover, who is played by, and I'm sorry, I have to say this, Matt Damon. If you've ever seen Team America, World Police, you're going to understand. And he's going to be in a couple of indie films. One is called Snap. The other is called Elsa and Fred. And the latter also has Christopher Plummer in it, whom we know as Chang from Star Trek VI.
Right. Now, is Christopher Plummer going to wear the eye patch with the Klingon bolts in it?
Oh, I sure hope so. I really hope so.
I think they should do Elsa and Chang. That sounds like a more interesting show to me.
Yeah. That actually sounds a little more like a sitcom idea, kind of like Bosom Buddies.
Elsa and Chang, yeah. Chang dresses up like a woman so he can live with Elsa.
Yeah. Yeah. And somehow Scott Bakula is Elsa. It could happen.
That's perfect. Scott Bakula and Christopher Plummer are Elsa and Chang.
Yes. I'd watch it.
Okay,
but
that,
we
that
don't have
great.
Just Scott Bakula news. We've actually got a few guys who are doing things. Some of them J.J. Abrams related, like Carl Urban, who is going to be on a show called Human. It's going to be on Fox, and it is about futuristic.
So what you're telling me is that Carl Urban is going to be playing a human on Fox.
Actually, yes, that is what I'm telling you.
sounds like a riveting premise for a show.
Yeah, they are futuristic detectives in L.A. He's playing the human, who's apparently going to be alongside an android-like being.
Oh, gosh. I thought this was going to be like an Alien Nation remake or something.
I don't know. My favorite part of this news bite, though, is that the name of Carl Urban's character is John Kennex. And anytime I see this on my screen, I think Kleenex. So he's John Kleenex to me.
I see. Well, okay, so I have a question here about this program. Now, looking at this show Human on Fox, now this is a J.J. Abrams show. So what I need to know is what is Hurley's role going to be in this show? I need to know who Evangeline Lilly is going to be playing. I need to know who Matthew Fox is going to be playing. Because I know this show is basically going to be a collection of the casts of Lost and Battlestar Galactica. Because isn't that what all of these shows are?
Pretty much. I think you're missing the really big question, though. And that is, how many lens flares are going to be in it?
Probably a lot. You know, we were reading Countdown to Darkness number 3 this weekend, which will be coming out on Wednesday. And as I told you, it was amazing how they managed to capture those JJ lens flares in the comic. And you thought I was
kidding.
Joking at first, I think, but I'm not.
You iMessaged me and told me, holy lens flares. And I just kind of LOL'd, haha, yeah, whatever. And then I open it up and wow, there really are a lot of lens flares in this thing.
There really are. So yes. There's probably going to be some lens flares here in Human. But Carl Urban, you know, he's used to it. He's worked with JJ, so he'll be fine.
Yeah. In fact, I think at this point, JJ is just going to recycle a lot of his former cast and crew because they are used to it. I think you're right. I think he's going to get people from Lost, some Battlestar Galactica. They know what they're doing. They know this routine. They'll just jump right in and get it done.
I have another question. So there's a lot of rumors going around about the impending release of a new iPad. And this new iPad is allegedly going to have the same backside design as the iPad mini and the iPhone 5, which means it's a matte black finish or silverish finish, I think, on the white one. As we've discussed on the Ready Room before, you know, JJ likes to do his lens flares in camera. And, you know, he rocks that iPad. He rocks that iPad on the set. That's how he gets those lens flares. What is he going to do if the silver back is gone off the iPad?
Oh, my. Maybe he'll get a custom one made just for him.
Oh, probably. Well, he is JJ Abrams.
Exactly. So, yeah. And, well, he can't live without lens flares.
There'll be like, you know, like the iPad 10 will be out and JJ and his crew, they'll still be using iPad 3. People say, why don't you upgrade, man? And he says, well, I got to have the silver backs, you know, got to get my trademark lens flares going on here.
Yeah. Or maybe they'll license a special JJ Abrams version of the
iPad. Like they did the U2 special edition iPods.
Right.
The red and
maybe
black.
Maybe they'll have that for JJ.
They'll have JJ's signature engraved on the back.
Yeah, maybe. Proceeds go to charity.
That'd be great. They could charge a $50 premium on that.
Yeah. What charity do you suppose JJ would want the proceeds to go to?
The Jedi Recovery Fund?
Pa-poom-ching. Very nice. Good work there, Chris.
It could be that. I don't know. Okay, well, who else do we have here? We talked about Enterprise earlier. We have John Billingsley, who, of course, played Dr. Phlox. He has some new stuff coming up.
Yeah, he's going to be doing a drama on CBS called Intelligence, which, okay, that's not an exciting title, but maybe this show's going to be a lot better than it is.
I see a connection here. Human intelligence. But of course, they're separated. They're on different networks.
Yeah, but you know, okay, this one takes place at U.S. Cyber Command. So maybe it's got this futuristic thing too. I mean, maybe they're not that different. I don't know. Maybe
the U.S. Cyber Command are the ones who are giving directions to the futuristic detectives in L.A. on Human.
I suppose so. I guess the main character, the important feature he has is that he can see the entire EM spectrum, and that's what's going to make him unique. And that is not John Billingsley's character, by the way. He's going to play a doctor. Hey, he knows about that. And he's going to be the top computer neuroscientist. So major knowledge.
I thought that was his rank, major uber knowledge.
Maybe it is.
You're saying that you mean he has a lot of knowledge.
He's got geek cred.
Haven't we already had this character who can access the entire EM spectrum? Wasn't his name Geordi LaForge?
Yes, indeed. Yes. Well, you know, network TV is always just a little bit behind the curve on these innovative things.
I guess so. So last person here is the new Sulu, John Cho, and he's hooking up with Roberto Orsi and Alex Kurtzman for a Fox pilot called Sleepy Hollow.
Right, and this is going to be a supernatural thriller, and he's playing a police officer.
Named Andy Dunn.
Yeah. Ooh, awesome name. And the description is, I think it intentionally low-key. They say he's a compassionate, helpful person, but there's more to him than meets the eye. Okay.
Okay.
Descriptive.
Right.
I guess we'll just have to find
out. He's actually a Starfleet officer. He actually flies the Federation flagship. That's what we don't know about him. That's why there's more to him than meets the eye.
Right. Andy Dunn is actually Officer Hikaru Sulu.
That's right. That'll be revealed in season 3.
Done and done.
Oh, Done and Done. Now that would be a great show. Done and Done.
Yes, it would.
They're like twin detectives.
Are they hooking up with bosom buddies?
Why not?
Maybe. I don't know. Actually, that would be a kind of a cool, identical twin cop drama. Done and
right.
Done.
But of course, they're cops now, but they're actually retired lawyers. They had a law firm, Done and Done.
Ah.
They were ambulance chasers, so they were often around crime scenes, and that got them interested in detective work. And that's how they decided to become detectives themselves. And the show Done and Done actually follows them in this new life as police detectives.
Yeah, they saw that they really had quite a knack for figuring these things out. And so they just decided to make a go of it. And we just watched them figure out the most insane, crazy stories you've ever seen.
Why aren't we working for networks?
I don't know. This is ridiculous. We should be.
So if you want more information about these items here, you can go over to StarTrek.com. They actually Trek Movie as well. Together, the two sites have quite a few articles related to what the Star Trek cast are doing with upcoming projects. So, Shar, as we move into movie news and rumors, we don't have a lot to talk about this week. But, leading up to Into Darkness, there was so much speculation about when the movie would actually come out because the time frame kept expanding and getting wider and wider between the 2009 movie and Into Darkness. And now iTechPost.com was actually reporting that Star Trek 3, if we'll call it that for the moment, could possibly be in theaters in 2016, which would put us on a 3-year cycle, which I think is a bit more reasonable. It's not like the 2-year cycle that we were used to with the original series movies, but it is more like what we kind of got into with TNG, I guess.
Yeah, this seems very reasonable. And is it just me, or when you say and hear Star Trek 3, do you not think of the search for Spock? I mean, we got to think of a different system for these new movies. It's just not working for me.
For now, we'll call this one Star Trek 2016, I guess.
That'll work. That makes a lot more sense to me because I'm not thinking about Spock then dying. And yeah. Anyway, 2016 seems like not only just a reasonable timeline, but it, of course, also coincides with the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So that makes a lot of sense.
And, it'll be, I think, a major, major fail by Paramount if they don't manage to get the movie out during the 50th anniversary year of Star Trek.
I agree. It's kind of a must. And it sounds like the producers are on board with this. They're saying we're definitely talking about the next one already, even though Into Darkness is not out officially yet. They don't want to wait 4 years, and I'm all for it. Go for it, guys. Do it.
Now, they also say that there's some mystery as to whether JJ will direct the film. I don't personally think there's any mystery. He's not going to direct this film. He's going to have his hands full with Star Wars.
It is your destiny.
Disney, I think, is going to really be pushing that release schedule for Star Wars. I really think they're going to want to get those movies out 2 years apart. And I, you know, JJ has established the look of the Abrams verse in the first two movies, and I think that can easily be handed off to someone else for the third and what is likely to be the final Abrams verse movie, I believe. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any mystery about whether JJ might direct this movie?
No, I think the real mystery is who is going to direct, and it's not JJ.
Right, it's not going to be JJ. I don't think so. And I think, I don't know, it could be a good thing maybe to have a little bit different take on this Abrams verse, get some new blood in there. They also mention as part of the story that Star Trek Into Darkness will have more connections to the original series. Again, now we're talking about the movie that's coming up here in May for most of you and end of August for me. And
yeah, I think that's become all, kind right? of,
no, why would I be? I love waiting, you know, 4 or 5 months after everyone else has seen a movie and I've already had to talk about it on my shows for all that time.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.
No problem. No, actually, I'm going to find a way to get onto the military base. Maybe I can, you know, pretend to be a German shepherd and wander onto the base and then I can turn back into myself, watch the movie and then disappear for, you know, until the Andorian fight scene breaks out and then I need to come in and help everyone.
Right.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
Yes, you might want to take some tips from Odo about shape-shifting then, if you're going to turn into a German shepherd.
That's what I need to do. But anyway, you know, the things we've seen come out, we know Carol Marcus is in the movie. We know that the Klingons are in the movie and they seem to play a reasonably significant role. We're, of course, pretty sure that Khan is in this movie at this point. Obviously, there are a lot of connections to the original series here. What I'm hoping the connection is that the story has more heart and core Star Trek sensibility to it. And we won't know until we see the movie if that's true or not, because we're not going to get that from the trailers, because they're presenting the movie to the general audience, as we've talked about on here week after week. So we're going to have to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt leading in where that's concerned.
Yeah, no matter how many spoilers you read, that's going to ultimately be the big surprise.
Yeah. And, you know, as many spoilers as we do read in order to do this show, I still really don't know what to expect out of this movie. And I think that's fantastic.
Right?
I'm really impressed.
They're doing a very good job of trying to keep things as much of a secret as possible, to not give things away. I do appreciate their effort, because I really do want to be... I want there to be some sort of surprise when I go to the theater and see this movie.
Right. Well, I mean, the Kienzer-Uhura relationship, that's really going to be a surprise. I mean, people thought Uhura and Spock was weird. I mean, Kienzer,
you just wait.
You talk about height differences. I don't know how that works, but it's there.
Well,
so,
you know, when there's love, there's a way. And yeah, apparently there was just more to that than hugging. I thought it was just Uhura giving a hug, you know, like she does with everybody. But apparently this is a thing, huh?
It's a thing, yeah.
Oh. All right, I'm game. I'll check it out. I'll see what's up.
I kind of dismissed Kienzer, but I have to say I'm impressed with that little guy now.
Hmm. Well, we'll see what happens.
Thank you.
being stranded 70,000 light years from home meant that the Voyager crew felt a lot of isolation, and as a result, they certainly loved their holodeck programs. And as we're recording this Ready Room on St. Patrick's Day, we thought that it would be a good idea to just spend the day in Fairhaven and meet down at Sullivan's to discuss the Voyager crew's little Irish adventures in the episodes Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. And to help us do that, we have with us a couple of our Trek FM colleagues from Literary Treks and the Orb. We have Matthew Rushing. Matthew, looks like you are guzzling some Guinness there today.
Boy, that's true. It's a grand drink. It's grand. I just love it. Having a great time. How's your St. Patty's Day there, Chris?
Not as green as it probably should be.
Boy, that's too bad.
We also have with us from To the Journey, international sex symbol, Tristan Riddell.
Hey, it's good to be here. It's good to finally be back. It's been a while since I've been on the Ready Room.
It has been a while. You're usually tied up with that sports ball, but not of the Irish kind.
No Irish football here.
Yep. Good. Well, I think when I told Char that we should do Fairhaven and Spirit Folk, I think she kind of choked a little bit. I could hear it all the way over here in Tokyo.
Deep down inside, I think I cried a little. But I agree.
I agree. It seemed appropriate. You know, it's St. Patrick's Day, so why not? Now, Tristan, I know that you are quite fond of Fairhaven.
I am more than fond. I'm a champion of Fairhaven. I love how people on Twitter said, when they found out that we were going to do Fairhaven and Spirit Folk today, they said, make sure the Insane Robin is on there. And that's right.
Lo and behold.
I am on here to defend these great episodes. Well, one great episode. And
yes.
Tristan,
you got that right.
Tristan,
I don't even know if I'd call it great.
I'm with you. I actually really do enjoy Fairhaven.
Okay, good.
And so, because it is a really fun episode, and so you're not the only lover of this quaint Irish tone.
Well, good. It won't be such an attack, or like a enormous attack on one opinion. It'll be nice and polarized.
Right, right. And it's not going to be an attack. I mean, I have to say that I'm not a big fan of Fairhaven, but it's not because of the Irish village elements, which I think is the reason a lot of people don't like it. It's more about the commentary on Janeway as a person, which I think is not very good. That's my main beef with it. But we're going to talk about that point extensively here. In fact, why don't we start out with that? Tristan, you brought this up in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
That it was, you felt that it was important that Voyager deal at some point with the fact that Janeway cannot be in a relationship with subordinates. She's isolated really for the rest of her life. And of course, we all need to have companionship. And this episode is the point at which they really examine that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this, from day one, this really needed to be addressed. And we kind of get late into the game when this comes about. I mean, the doctor even said, like, you're pretty much limited to this and some common dalliance from a passerby alien. And we'd saw that in Counterpoint. Or did she hook up with him in Counterpoint?
No.
Did they ever
actually
sleep together?
I don't know if they got that far. You know, it's really hard to figure out exactly where the line was drawn at all in that episode. Did she love him? Didn't she? Did they make out? Did they do a little more than make out? We just don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, in the realm of television today, if they kiss, then it means that they had sex. So it's hard to judge.
I don't really think that they did. I think it kind of stopped at the kiss.
I think I'm with you on that one. Like, I choose to believe that, because he was a jerk, and so I choose to believe that she didn't. But that's the thing. I mean, she doesn't have any kind of sexual interaction, and, you know, she's a red-blooded woman, and she has, you know, the captain has needs, and
that darn right, yes,
it's true. And
beyond coffee, you mean, right?
Beyond coffee, she gets a little gratification from coffee, but she needs more.
I think I noticed that was the thing, is that coffee was really starting to not affect her in the way that she was needing, and that's why she finally finds this program where she's like, okay, this guy's kind of cute, I kind of like him. Coffee's not really doing it any for me anymore. In fact, it's really obnoxious when it happens in front of Neelix in any way. So maybe this might be the answer.
Absolutely. And this is like you. This is an issue that we only really dealt with in The Next Generation with Barclay. I mean, it was all kind of suggested, like, okay, he probably takes this to the next level with his hollow addiction, because obviously...
We didn't need to know that, though.
We didn't... That's the thing. It was all implied. We don't need to know. But with this one, it's like, no, she... This is, as far as they know, even though they didn't talk about it enough on the show, as far as they know, this is going to be a generational ship. Catherine's never going to see Earth again, and so that means that she has zero chance for a relationship because of a stupid Starfleet rule that doesn't apply to them. And
right.
So and, now, like, this is her okay. option. And so I was kind of with it. I was like, yeah, go for it.
I feel like the rule is stupid anyway. I mean, Picard broke the so-called rule before it was a rule, I suppose. I mean, they kind of just imposed this on her, yeah. I felt.
Well,
that's right. He, yeah. in, what was it, Lessons? He,
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but
well,
he...
is it actually a rule? Or is it more not a written rule, but it's simply the, a captain naturally feels they can't be involved with subordinates?
That's
I
a good point.
I thought it was a Starfleet regulation. Well, I thought they, somewhere in the series they actually said that.
I don't know if I remember if they actually said it. Chris, sure. I think you might have a point. It might just be like, no, they're your subordinates. You can't do that. I mean, yeah. I know there's several.
I'm not positive. You know, maybe at some point it was once mentioned, but it seems like it's probably not... It's probably discouraged, but it's probably an official regulation. Yeah,
yeah, I'm sure Starfleet frowns upon it, if nothing else.
well, naturally. I mean, there's a lot of potential for problems that could come from that, so it is understandable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But they're in a very unique situation.
Yeah, I mean, the whole no fraternizing with the subordinates thing is a very good, valid point. Look at in-office relationships. I mean, that alone is bad enough, but then, like... With Voyager in isolation, in a way you'd want her to break the rule, and then yet, what if something really goes sour? You are stuck with that person for the next 70 years.
What I think...
You have to find a way to get along, or someone's getting dropped off on the nearby planet. And it's not Janeway.
I think one of the things, though, it does the reason it didn't ever come up again is because... You know, Kate Mulgrew put her foot down and said, no, I don't want her to have a relationship. But what doesn't make sense is that for the story-selling aspect of Voyager, they never really deal with the fact that they're going to be there for 70 years unless a miracle happens. And mm-hmm. so this ship needed immediately to turn into a generational ship. And because it never does from the day one, it's intellectually dishonest of a show from the very beginning. And it's sad that the writers didn't have the guts to make this a completely different type of Star Trek show and have to worry about, okay, well, how are we going to train these kids? What are we going to do with them? You know, how are we going to make this ship that's only made to fit so many people have more people on it? I mean, all of these questions make for such a much more interesting show, but they're never willing to actually go there. And again, it cuts the character down of Janeway, I think, to have to... resign herself to getting laid in the holodeck instead of having a real actual relationship with somebody in her crew and seeing those inner workings play out. Like, give us something completely different. This is supposed to be Star Trek on the other side of the galaxy. So let's see what that actually looks like, especially when you don't get to call up Starfleet every 5 seconds.
And
except that I think that Voyager was a reaction to Deep Space Nine, in a sense that they wanted to go back to the formula of the original series and The Next Generation. They wanted to go back to the original series aspect of Strange New Worlds by putting them in the Delta Quadrant, so everything was new, and they wanted to go back to the Next Generation formula of standalone episodes with very little continuity from story to story, which I think was a reaction to how complex DS9 had become, and that's what UPN wanted to go for. Though I totally agree that for me, if I were creating the show, I would do what you said, Matthew, and really put this more interesting, more complex spin on the idea for the first time of a Federation, a Starfleet vessel that had to become a generational ship, because there's so much to explore there, but it clearly was not the direction that they wanted to go in with the show itself.
I think Ronald D. Moore had such a sour taste in his mouth from working just on a couple episodes with Voyager that he immediately put it into Battlestar Galactica when Adama said, right. they need to start having babies. I feel like that was a direct response to Voyager. Yeah. Like, he basically said, this is what I would have done. And I swear, this was his middle finger to Braga, like, on the air. I genuinely believe that.
He has a huge reaction to working on Voyager 2. There's a great interview that I was reading from him the other day, and he talks about all the things that he saw that were missing. And not only that, but just the writers, he said, honestly not caring. And it flows through on screen when you kind of get these kind of stories where we're rehashing things we've already done two times now on different series. So you've seen this kind of thing on The Next Generation, and you saw this kind of thing a lot on The Next Generation with holodeck characters. You saw it a little bit on Deep Space Nine, but done really well with someone like Vic. And now you're going to do it again on Voyager. So this is the third iteration, and it's so far diluted at this point that, you know, we might as well just stop watching.
Right. I feel like they played it very, very safe on Voyager. They could have really broken ground and done all these amazing things, and instead we get the rehash, and essentially I feel like Spirit Folk is shipping a bottle.
Well, yeah, that's why I kept saying that, hey, look, Michael Moriarty is walking around the ship.
That's pretty much, only he's not fully aware that he's a hologram. It's they're just, I don't know, they're a little too ignorant for that.
The way I have described it is that, and I think it's natural that it happens. It's why you need new blood in creative ventures, is that at this point we're into the sixth season, the middle of the sixth season of Voyager, which means that we are closing in on 700 episodes of Star Trek. And I think that the way that you produce a Star Trek episode had become very, very formulaic at this point. And that's why it starts to feel this way. And it's not even the writing. It's just the whole packaging of it. You can tell, like, they know this is how we put together an episode. And as a result of that, even visually, you do feel like they're revisiting things very often. But nevertheless, I mean, there is an important question here that's being asked. So the question is, how do you deal with that? And that brings us to what, for me, is the problem that I have with Fairhaven, which isn't the Irish wrappings or any of that, which is fun, and I actually enjoy that part, just watching it just for fun. It's the fact that Janeway thinks it's okay to create a designer hollow boyfriend. That,
yes, thank you. You know,
in every relationship, well, I shouldn't say that. It's a commonly held belief that women enter into relationships with the idea that if this man isn't exactly the man that they want, they can change him. And whether that's true of all women or not, which it's not true of all women, but I think some women do feel that way. Otherwise, people wouldn't believe that. But what we get on the screen here is Janeway apparently completely believes that, to the point where she says that, you know, well, Tom didn't create him to my specifications. So she goes in and just starts designing a man. And of course, the famous line of delete the wife.
Oh, buddy.
That was fantastic. I love that. I love that line. I think
like
it was all worth
that?
It just for that. What?
What do you like about that line?
Because it's hysterical. Because she goes in there and she's like, I'm going to, you know, like, it's just, it's absurd. I mean, it's satirical. Yeah. This section is all about satire for everything that Chris just said. Like, this isn't real life. This is a reflection of real life exposed to the nth degree. This is a untrue stereotype of women saying that they want to change their man. And she finds someone, she's like, okay, make him a little bit taller, give him a little bit more education. No, I like the scratchy beard. And oh, BT dubs, delete the wife. It's like, if somebody could create their own situation, they would. Everyone in this room, everyone listening, if they could create their own situation, they would. And you're lying if you say no. And I just love how it became so far-fetched and over the top that it became satire, because we will never have that situation where we'll go into a holodeck and like design our perfect mate. And that's what she was trying to do. And I feel like we kind of flow on a journey with her where she doesn't think that this is going to be, you know, a real relationship. It's just, you know, she's going to play around a little bit, and then she starts developing feelings and then realizes, oh crap, I can't change him this much because I have real feelings for him.
It would have helped if she had just seen Stepford Wives, because she would realize that you can't create a Stepford boyfriend and actually be happy, because that's what she's trying to do. And, you know, when we try to fit people into our mold and like just be the perfect thing that we want, we lose out because we're missing out on the things that kind of challenge us and sharpen us and make us better people. You know, Michael might not have been perfect for her, but I'm sure that there are plenty of things he probably could have taught her just by being himself. And she just kind of negates all of that and changes all of that and just makes basically a reflection of herself. And if that is not the biggest form of narcissism that I've ever seen in anyone, just to give yourself basically a reflection of yourself. Well, I mean, just create a hologram of yourself and go have sex with that.
Well, I think that's the lesson learned, though. That's the whole idea. That's the point of it.
Which I Maybe like so, that she but... learns. It's just kind of sad that Catherine doesn't already know this. Like, come on.
Okay, yeah, right.
I'm supposed
you.
To look up
it's
to this woman?
That's the point.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't
it's
look up to this
that
woman.
She had to go here in the first place.
You say it's satire, Tristan, and I can see that as you point it out. And if you read it that way, you do take the episode differently. For me, though, I have never taken it as satire. I think that because of knowing the character up to this point in the sixth season, I really believe that this is how Catherine Janeway thinks. I don't think that it was a satirical situation. I think she really thinks that it's okay to do that. And it's not until the doctor talks sense into her later that she realizes that maybe it's not. And I was watching and I was thinking when the doctor was talking to her that I said, is Janeway the captain of a Federation starship, or is she a high school girl? Because her reactions to him were almost like those of a teenager, I felt.
Yes, I agree. I felt like she handled this entire thing very immaturely from start to finish. She changes him because she doesn't like little things, which is what, I'm sorry, what someone who, you have the capability. Oh, well, just do it. Don't consider the ramifications. And then, yeah, Doc finally talks some sense into her. And I do feel that, yeah, she's realizing that for the first time. Oh, but even before that, she's trying to back off. You know, she's recycling the books like, oh, this just... this can't work. She's so all or nothing sometimes.
Well, and
she's not really thinking about the heart of the matter until Doc talks to her.
It's because she's a control freak. I mean, she really
sure,
is.
And,
I mean,
most captains are.
Yeah, but I mean, she wants to be so much in control. I mean, you even saw that in Resolutions where she's afraid of losing any kind of control with Chakotay, even though Chakotay is fine with realizing, okay, we might be here forever, so let's just enjoy what we have. You know, instead, she is, again, so much about being in control, she can't even think that there might be a time where they would, you know, be okay with being together. And I think that's one of the things throughout the series. I really wish they would have opened her up and allowed her become... She should have been the captain who is the closest to her crew ever and could have had a relationship with one of them, because she's not... And I mean, this is, you know, 70,000 light years away, and they could have given us a completely different type of captain. And yet, you know, she acts like Picard all the time, and she's not in Picard's situation.
I don't know if she acts like Picard really, because Picard actually listens to his crew and takes their suggestions under advisement. And
unless
makes
you're Worf.
Whereas,
unless you're Worf.
Unless you're Worf. No, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
No, but Janeway just dismisses Chakotay throughout the series. She does not listen to her first officer. I mean, she lets him talk to her, but then she's usually like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Except for this episode, she does listen to him. She's like, okay, Chakotay does it, so I'll do it. You know, he gets laid in the holodeck, so I'll get laid on holodeck.
Did you guys notice that? As soon as he says, hey, it doesn't stop me that they're not real. It's like the go-ahead for her. Suddenly she's in the holodeck and
dancing
around.
Getting sweaty.
Yeah.
but the thing is, we have to put things in perspective here. I feel like our sensibilities have been polluted because of the Doctor. The Doctor is a sentient being. He became a sentient being, and it took them years and years to accept him as a sentient being. It doesn't mean that all holograms are sentient beings. To her and to everybody else, these people aren't real. They were literally designed by their helmsman to be their playthings. They are not a sentient person. It's not the Doctor. Think back to TNG when Geordi was with the holographic Leah Brahms. Okay, Picard comes in and he's like, oh, Captain, this is Leah Brahms. Captain couldn't give two craps whether or not like he introduced himself to a hologram. Picard completely ignored Leah Brahms and just continued to talk to Geordi because she's not a real person. She's a plaything. She's a tool. And that's what happened when she started with this. She did not go to the holodeck and say, okay, this is a real boyfriend of mine, and I'm going to change him the way that I want him. No, this was her play. This is a literal plaything. This was a toy. And so that's when she slowly developed into it. That's why we got to take it from her perspective, not from ours, because we love the Doctor. He's a person. And so because of that, any anthropomorphized holographic image is a person in our minds because of it.
But she begins to have feelings for this person very quickly because it is programmed to have a personality. It's programmed to have thoughts and reactions and all of those things. And she very quickly, obviously, starts to fall for this guy. And then immediately she starts to change him the minute she finds out he has a wife, because she feels guilty that somehow she's cheating on, you know, with a hologram's, you know, wife. And so I see what you're saying, Tristan, but I don't think that she approaches the holodeck like that anymore. I don't think...
I mean, I feel like one night of rings doesn't really mean that she has a commitment to this real person. I feel like it was like, oh, this could be fun, but it'd be much more fun without the wife. But like, I feel like if there was more time and she developed real feelings afterwards and then continued to change, then that would be a huge character flaw if she actually developed real feelings. But that's when the Dear John letter came into play. That's when she realized how absurd she was being and how the situation kind of just went out of control because the time was put into it. So I agree with you, Matt. I do.
I think the lines are very blurred about the holodeck and what's real and what isn't, and then how... And it's actually an issue that we're going to have to deal with in our own society in the coming decades. I mean, you already get that a bit with certain video games that are very immersive environments. And when that becomes more real, when we have 3D environments that we can just walk into, which probably is going to happen. I don't know if they'll be as complex as the holodecks of Star Trek, but actually there's probably no reason why down the road they won't be. We're going to have to deal with this issue ourselves in the real world. And it is very blurred of what's real and what's not and how it affects your psyche. And so it is an important issue here. I think I'll go back and watch it the way that you suggest, Tristan, and see if I take it differently that way and see what I think about it. Okay, so to something more lighthearted here for a moment, Matthew, you were discussing in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
The sets and the production value of Fairhaven and the costume design and such. So let's talk about that for a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, even though I don't love Spirit Folk, but I really do like Fairhaven, both of the episodes are beautifully done. They look gorgeous. The sets look fantastic. They have some really good guest actors on. In fact, I was really shocked. I'm watching Spirit Folk today, and Ian Abercrombie plays Milo, and he actually played the voice of Palpatine in the Clone Wars for the longest time until he passed away. So it was really cool to see him again in this role. Sorry, that's a free side note for all those Wars fans out there. But, you know, the minute that episode started, Fairhaven did, it looked really good. It looked like they had spent a lot of time putting this together, getting the costumes right, getting people who could do good Irish accents, and yes. Which is very important.
Very important. Yeah. Very important.
Oh, it's right. It's very important. You want to have the best. And it really helped bring me in, especially on Fairhaven. The episode is silly, but I really enjoy it because of the beauty of the production and how much fun the cast is actually having. I mean, even Robert Beltrand is having a good time, I feel like, in this episode, because he gets to make fun of Kathy. And that's, you know, that was really, for me, something I enjoy seeing when the cast of Voyager is actually having a good time. And so, good stuff.
Yeah, this is true. You can tell when the cast is having a lot of fun. If they're on location or on a really fun set, they really ham it up. And yeah, I'll give these two episodes the benefit of, yes, the set design and the costuming. I mean, it's appropriate. I don't know if it's exactly awesome. I mean, I think some of the outfits that Janeway wore were pretty drab, but they were appropriate for the period, so...
Well, and that's the point. If they're appropriate for the period,
exactly. Yes, yes. Yeah. Very well done on that. It is fun and it's very authentic looking. Yes, they did do really good on that. I just wish they would have done better on the story.
Yeah. So, Tristan, a question just popped in my head as we're talking about Fairhaven itself and the village and the people and all. Can you tell me in what way could this episode or both of these episodes have been made better by the addition of a monkey?
Well, I think it would have been, I mean, I think Char would have liked this especially more if somehow, like you know, Ireland is, you know, like this town was near a port and sailors came in all the time. So I say like a sailor brought in a monkey, but it was a disease-ridden monkey. And then we could get zombies, but like Irish holographic zombies in Voyager.
Whoa.
Oh, God. And... like they either Hell have to yeah. remove the head or destroy the brain to cancel the program. I think that probably would have been.
Oh my God, Harry is going to be first.
I just thought you were going to say that the monkey was going to be disease ridden and that's how Harry was going to get his syphilis. I just...
And then he starts glowing for some reason.
Hey, it's not like he hasn't done that before.
Oh goodness.
Man.
This
so
is
that,
really...
that is how I think it would improve.
Well, I was Drastic. Thinking, you know, in Sullivan's when they're arm wrestling, if they could all arm wrestle the monkey and place bets on it, I thought that might be a nice
idea. Oh, that would be excellent. Pretty cool, although I've always had the visual that the monkey would officiate. Yeah, he would get in the middle and then...
Like he would pound the glass three times like the doctor.
Nice.
Yes, yes.
This is really off the wall, but seeing Janeway in those costumes, all I could think of is that I feel like she should be Marilla from... Anne of Green Gables in some sort of production because she'd be perfect. So yes, maybe I'm just off the wall, but Kate Mulgrew, if you're listening, you should be in Anne of Green Gables. Just saying.
It would work for her.
We mentioned Harry here. We have to talk about PDH. And what I just have to ask you guys is that a trick question? Because, I mean, what a girl...
Really...
basically asks you to make out with her, you don't say, is that a trick question?
I think for Harry, it's much more complicated than that. He just can't recognize when a girl is being direct. He will find any way to not get laid.
When
a hologram, the wrong twin, the wrong alien.
when
but he does kiss a cow.
Oh, that sucked. Yeah. I hated that.
Yeah,
I felt so bad.
I love that. That was my highlight of Spirit Folk.
She asks in Spirit Folk to the two gentlemen, like, who do you think I am? What kind of girl do you think I am? And I'm thinking, well, we know what kind of girl you are, but we also know that your virginity has never been in safer hands than PDH's.
Right.
Because there ain't nothing going to happen there.
I thought it was...
Nope. Nobody got time for that.
At the end of the episode, when... like she comes back to Harry and they're flirting again and she's like, oh, whatever, it's all in good fun. No, you got turned into a cow, okay? Like, just no. Like, it's cold shoulder or, you know, that's it. There shouldn't have been no reconciliation, but then it wouldn't have been Voyager if there was realism, you know,
right,
at the end of the episode. So,
and I'm sorry, but that Harry's approach, I mean, he was really actually doing a pretty smooth job considering it was him and the situation. There really should have been some kind of awkward shunning going on instead. Don't you think?
Hardcore, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but my favorite part of Fairhaven, actually, was when Seamus is able to sweet-talk his way into Seven's good graces. I mean, I don't know how that's possible, but Harry should have been taking notes, because apparently you just need a nice and flowery language, you need to butter her up like that, and she's ready to go.
I think Harry needs to learn to do an Irish accent.
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be really weird.
It would be like that, it was either a Starburst or a Skittles commercial or something like that, and we had an Asian leprechaun with an Irish accent, and it was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, and that's immediately what I thought of when I thought about Harry with an Irish accent.
I want to see that on a Lucky Charms box.
Oh, and God.
It's frightening. I'm sure there are Asians in Ireland who have an Irish accent, but I have yet to meet one.
And, yeah.
Especially one who's an actual leprechaun, right?
Who's an actual leprechaun, yes.
Yeah, right. Speaking of leprechauns, the other thing I loved besides Harry getting kissed by a cow was the line about Neelix in Spirit Folk. Well, if I've ever seen a leprechaun, it's that Neelix guy. Right. So I made a little bit of art for you guys. If you look on the other side of the room, there's a nice little image of Neelix with his Lucky Charms.
Oh, gosh, that's brilliant.
Okay, I see it. Yeah.
Have to be sure we put that in the enhanced podcast.
Yes, that's sure. Fantastic, Char. You know what I really liked, too, and I was really disappointed, is that they cut out the Andorian fight scene here. You know, they're getting that big fight in the bar, and I'm like, where's the Andorian? He's got to be somewhere. I'll take your blood to Andoria. And I was so disappointed. Yeah. That guy shows up on set every week. They always cut him out, and it always hacks me off.
How do you suppose Andorians are at arm wrestling?
Oh, I think Harry would have been smoked.
No, they intend to wrestle. They don't arm wrestle.
Yeah.
I don't think Andorians...
That visual with the monkey officiating would be really interesting. I have a new Photoshop project.
So the antenna, they kind of wrap around each other, and then they see who can slam the other
head
into the desk. Into the table.
That's how it works.
That's awesome.
Man, we've just created a new Star Trek game.
Antenna wrestling.
Oh.
Love it. In an Irish pub.
Oh, man.
That brings out much better visuals than Janeway barrel rolling with Michael Sullivan.
Oh God!
I don't know if the power grid would be able to handle that much antenna wrestling at one time, and with a monkey inside of it.
It would be pretty intense.
Officiating,
That's explosive right there.
So okay, well, let's talk about the power grid for a minute because. Okay, look.
You're going to take a deep breath for this one.
Take a deep breath, everyone. Chris is going to pontificate. Here we go.
Okay, so Shara and I were talking about this last night, actually. And here's the thing. On most shows, this wouldn't bother me. You know, I can just accept this and I can just watch Voyager and enjoy the stories and it's fine. Okay, I'm not that much of like an uber geek hard ass about this technology that I can't enjoy the stories. However, Star Trek goes out of its way they have science advisors and they go out of their way to try to make the technology and the science extrapolate from our current knowledge, and they try to make it realistic to the extent that the world feels real to you and you can kind of see that, yeah, this is probably a real technology. So Voyager sets up this idea that because they're going to be short on resources, they set up this idea that the holodeck runs on a separate power grid from the rest of the ship and the two are incompatible with one another. Now, first, this is just a crazy idea to let them run that holodeck 24 hours a day, no matter what else is going wrong on the ship.
Two holodecks 24/7.
Two holodecks 24/7.
Well, Tommy has his way, yes.
But the bigger issue with that is that if you're going to establish that, which I can accept, okay, fine, in the Intrepid class design, they decided to separate the two so that you don't have the kinds of problems that you had on the Enterprise D. Okay, I get that. But if you're going to do that, you can't start saying that you're going to transfer power from the holodeck to the other systems every time there's a ship problem. And that's what they do once again in this episode.
Well, that, and even if they're on separate, they're separate grids, that power has to come from somewhere. And that power is going to come from the warp core, obviously.
No, so, yes. Does it come from the warp core? It comes from Neelix's kitchen.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The little Talaxian hamsters. They have these little bicycles that they pedal while they're not cooking.
He's got little Talaxian Oompa Loompas back there just huffing and puffing away.
I thought that,
that's even better.
No, I thought that was just Neelix's job. He just jumps on the bike after he's finished, and he has to pump, and he creates enough power. So
what's cool is it's like a dual system. When he pedals the bike, not only does it supply power to the holodeck, it also, you know, churns the little blender so he can mix up, you know, his Leola root batter and such for the pancake day.
He makes great margaritas that way, too.
That's why he's still on the ship, because he knows how to work and he knows how to make his work for him.
That's right. He's the ultimate multitasker.
So Tristan, you I mean, I know Shar and I already agree about this power grid thing, but you're kind of giving me a look on the camera right now. So tell us what you feel about the power grid.
No. I'm giving you a look of amusement, not because I disagree with you. It's just, how do I put this? This is not something that's exclusive to Voyager. The holodeck power grid, yes, but I'm talking about the idea and the plot device and the writers doing what they want to accomplish what they want in any given situation. If anything, if Voyager didn't do this, it wouldn't be a Star Trek show. I am completely with you, Chris. It's absurd. It is just a way for them to be like TNG instead of Deep Space Nine. It's so that they can be TNG and still have the holodecks, even though they're stranded in the Delta Quadrant, and apparently deuterium is simultaneously hard to find, and you can find it in any system.
right.
Yeah.
It's this kind of duality that exists a lot in Voyager, but come on, we were raised on this since the 60s. You know, that's kind of, I made my peace with it. It's absurd, it's stupid, and it shouldn't exist, but it's nothing new.
Well, and I'd agree with you, Tristan, except for Deep Space Nine happened, and they showed me you can do an intellectually honest Star Trek show for the most part and not have to resort to this kind of shenanigans. And I say shenanigans because we're talking about an Irish show.
That is well put word.
Exactly. This tomfoolery that they've got going on is ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. But you don't have to have this kind of intellectual duality of just kind of check your brain at the door to watch Voyager. That's kind of silly. And it would have been a much better idea for them to say, we're actually going to deal with the issues of how hard it is to be in the Delta Quadrant. And I think, again, it would have just made for a more interesting show that.
Matthew, I mean, what you're saying about Deep Space Nine is completely right. And I am a Niner. I love Deep Space Nine. I am a huge Niner, and the reason why that worked is because they had better stories. They still had the meaningless technobabble that came around to fix an episode if they needed it. They still used it just as much as Voyager did. It's just Voyager did not have the chops to back it up, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we just talked about, like, last week, Little Green Men, and they use a lot of technobabble there, but I forgive it because they actually create a very funny story.
It's a fantastically and well-written episode, and that's why it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me just say a couple of things that I do think saying check your brain at the door to watch Voyager might be a little bit harsh.
Char and I host a show. Bit. Let's not forget that we host a Voyager show.
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit harsh. I think maybe you sometimes have to suspend your sense of reality to watch Voyager. You have to kind of accept a few of these things. I think on the flip side, Matthew, like you say, show how hard it is to survive in the Delta Quadrant. That would be one way to take it. But on the flip side, make it so that the power source is easily obtainable. You know, they have other problems they have to deal with, but a source of energy is not one of those problems. So then you don't have to have this silly separate power grid thing that you violate continuously throughout the series.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I would appreciate that more. Just tell me, you know, for whatever reason, power is abundant in the galaxy. We don't have to worry about our power source. We do have to worry about finding fresh vegetables. We have to worry about reproduction, how we're going to keep things going generation after generation. I would appreciate that a little bit more. But anyway, I can suspend my sense of reality, I guess, and how this power grid thing works, and I can just enjoy the Voyager episodes. It is just one of those things where every time it comes up, I feel like, do you... Consistency, guys. You know, the audience, Star Trek fans are intelligent people. Star Trek fans notice these things, and because your audience is intelligent and your audience knows these things, you have to be, I think, a little bit more careful about how you set things up.
And
a bit careless about it.
Right. If you're going to make up a rule like this, then stick to your own rules at the very least.
Like, yeah, make it a rule, not a suggestion that you can throw away.
And what you said, Chris, makes complete sense, because why wouldn't Starfleet ships be built with energy sources that are abundant in the galaxy that they're exploring? I mean, you're boldly going where no one has gone before, so that means that you're probably not always going to be in touch with, you know, the rest of your fleet. So you're going to need to replenish. I mean, think of Kirk on his 5-year mission. You know, he can't be near a starbase all the time. So you have to have replenishable resources for your ship, but you also have to be able to get that power from other places. And, you know, it always seemed like that, you know, deuterium and all those things was pretty plentiful in the Alpha Quadrant. Is it just not plentiful in, you know, the Delta Quadrant? That doesn't really make sense.
I feel like that's why I feel like that's why dilithium crystals were invented. It was like, okay, they're dilithium crystals. They just work. They make the engines go. And the engines power the ship. And
need things to make us go.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and just every once in a while, you know, like they crack or something goes wrong. It's just to deal with it, but it's not something you have to deal with on a daily basis. It's like, oh, it's like when you buy a really nice sofa. It's like, okay, I bought a really nice sofa. I don't have to worry about that for a long time. I have that sofa. But once you move or your kid spills some juice on it, crap, I gotta buy a new sofa. But that's the challenge. Right. It's not like, oh God, every day, is that sofa still gonna be there when I get back? You know?
And, the leprechaun snuck in and stole my sofa. Ah,
the Asian leprechaun snuck in.
And now the monkey's reclining on it and throwing things all over it.
I thought it was those little Talaxian hamsters that were stealing it.
No, they're
too
hiding
between
the
cushions.
Exactly. So. I hate sitting on those guys.
They squeal really loud.
Yeah.
If you do that.
And bite.
Ouch.
All right. Well, let's come back around to the relationship stuff here just for a moment. Now, I believe that we felt that Coco was a little bit jealous of Michael here.
Jealous?
Yeah, I think, well, at least the look that he kind of gave Michael when Janeway was like, I'm going to show him around the ship, was the death glare.
Ah,
like,
that look.
You know, you can keep your dalliance in the holodeck where I can't see it. Obviously, I've been pining for you for 6 years. But thanks for bringing your boyfriend here now. You know, I don't bring my holodeck conquests onto the bridge and show them around. So could you get your man off my bridge? Because I'm a little bit upset here. Yeah, my bridge. Yeah. You're going to have him sit in my chair, too?
Probably, just to spite him.
You don't see me bringing my Hollow 7 around.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
No.
Yeah, that's right. I brought it up. Yeah,
the next thing you know, she's going to have the bridge cleared so they can, you know, do things.
In his chair.
Exactly.
Oh my.
Kim is never going to want to use his station
and
again.
Watch.
Yeah, then they'll go down to, everyone else goes down to Astrometrics and Seven pulls up the main view screen on the bridge in Astrometrics. So it's like
popcorn
IMAX
is passed around.
You get like Kathy and Michael in IMAX in Coco's chair.
I'm not the only one who thought that screen would be like the coolest thing ever for IMAX.
Yeah. All I can picture
is... We're talking
is,
porn, is, IMAX porn. Yeah.
All I can picture is the doctor taking that Q roll from Moonraker, and Seven's like, what is he doing? He's attempting re-entry.
Jeez. Moonraker.
See, everyone would have expected Char to say that, not Matthew. That's the Ready Room twist.
Yeah. Well, I can't always keep it on the other side of the room.
One time. You know what it was, Matthew, is I was on broadcast earlier today. I got all these things out already. Toned it down a little. So I'm leaving it for you, buddy. Good job.
I'm glad I made you proud.
You done good, babe.
So, well, let's jump into towards as we go through Spirit Folk, and especially as we get towards the end, and Janeway and Michael, they kind of resolve this relationship thing where he finds out she's a captain and such. What are your thoughts on the resolution of the whole Janeway dealing with her isolation and creating her perfect man and then finding out she has feelings for him?
I can't say what I want to say.
What? Why
it's
not?
It's not family friendly. I just told you, Matthew, I got it out of my system. I lied.
Give us a PG-13 rated version.
Yeah,
of
can't
it.
You give us a PG-13 one?
Yeah.
Okay. I think Janeway should have just stuck with her little toy in her dresser. She can customize that and not have feelings for it.
That's not the one that Chakotay used his replicator rations to replicate for her as a gift, is it?
We don't know that.
That happens? That's a present you give to somebody?
You never know. I mean, he will do anything for his captain.
And here I thought it was just a pocket watch.
No, it's one of those really versatile pocket watches.
Yeah, it's a pocket something.
Okay, all
right. Yeah, it's made by Pebble, right? That's
the Pebble. I think I'm going to talk about what I thought about it now.
Matthew is on a roll. Yeah, buddy. Woo.
Yeah, well, anyway, Chris.
You go on with your intellectual conversation. Yes, Matthew and I are going to have a better conversation over in the corner in the other side of the room.
All right. Well, you tell us what you think, Tristan.
Honestly, I felt like Michael should have been the only one who knew the truth. Mm. I felt like it would have been a lot more interesting if Michael was in on it. You know, like he was the only one who had a relationship with someone outside of Fairhaven. And it's just there's no way that anything would have been remotely similar to their experience in Fairhaven that it would have been after Spirit Folk. Like, the charm would have been gone. They would have constantly been asking them questions like, what happens in the future? Or what can you tell me about the weather? You know, like, can you fix this for me? I need some more money. It's just, no. Like, if these people were developed on, pre-Starfleet humans, then that's all that they're going to talk about. And I felt like it was naive to think that it could go back to normal. And I thought it would have been a much more dynamic if Michael only knew. And Char and I know this, but I don't think you guys do, is that Michael is actually revisited in the Voyager relaunch novels, where at the very beginning of the first relaunch novel, she gives out an announcement like, just so you know, before we make it to Earth, our libraries are going to be combed through. So anything you don't want Starfleet to know about, delete right now. And so she goes and she has a final conversation with Michael and she gets rid of him. She cyber dumps him.
I remember that. Yeah, it's from Homecoming.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you have read Homecoming. Okay.
Great. Oh, yeah. I've read all the Voyager novels.
Oh, Matthew is the book expert.
Yeah. So that's why I do literary treks, Tristan.
I've never seen you review a Voyager one, so I've only seen you do some minor stuff.
Oh, really?
So.
Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet. We'll get there.
You reviewed The Eternal Tide.
Yeah, I did review.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I missed
Tide.
That one.
You know, Tristan, I completely agree. When I got to the end, I thought this is again completely intellectually dishonest to have all these people just accept that they'd be from the future. I mean, it would be better almost to tell them that they were spirit folk from the other side and be like, hey, we're nice spirit folk, and we really like you guys, and we just want to keep hanging out with you. And, you know, there's the evil spirit folk, and we're going to protect you from them. I mean, this would have been such a better story.
It would have been fun for them, right?
Exactly. It would have been really fun.
They could have continued to play in that village and pretend to be spirit folk for
and they would have been able to use their magic, and, I mean...
You know, and then they create Spirit Folk 2 and then Spirit Folk 3.
Yes.
And they keep upgrading the holodeck program. Graphics keep getting better and better, you know, and then...
The other thing that I thought was really interesting is that apparently, too, Janeway... after her talk with Chakotay and then in Spirit Folk, she is very comfortable with her crew knowing that she is fracking around with a hologram, and she doesn't really care if anybody knows, which I thought was great character development for her to say, I'm going to be open and everybody's going to know and it's going to be fine. In fact, I'm going to put my boyfriend over Tom and Harry, and he's not even real.
That's why she told them, if you come to the holodeck and my pink nightgown is hanging on the control panel, don't come in.
Yeah, don't go in.
But I just thought that was
interesting. Even if it's unlocked.
That they she had learned, but then she had got so emotionally attached to this person that she's like willing to put Tom and Harry's life in any kind of risk, and even then the doctor, because she doesn't want to get rid of her photo boyfriend, and it didn't make sense to me.
B'Elanna's reaction to that.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
It was honest. It was fantastic.
She really is the only voice of reason in this episode.
Yeah, when her and Seven are the only voice of reason, you know there's something wrong on Voyager.
Well, the thing with Seven, she kind of does have that voice of reason in the situation because she still has a Borg sensibility and she doesn't really put up this kind of nonsense. She wants to be efficient. I love B'Elanna in here, though, because B'Elanna is the only person who is saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't run this program round the clock, you know. Maybe we shouldn't keep spending our time replacing holo emitters. She's the only person that seems to realize that they're using ship resources to play around in this Irish village when there's a bigger problem going on.
Right. Yeah, she's the only one noticeably irritated that the holodeck is blowing out emitters. Like, what was it, 3 in a day or something like that?
And she's the only one who's in a real relationship, like not a fake
She's
in a real one. So she's putting, you know, the life of her paramour above, you know, a hologram because she knows that he's real. You know, I mean, any of these characters could be rebuilt and replaced. But so, again, she says it, Tom and Harry can't be replaced. And so, that mentality of Janeway was insane. Like, you cannot be a captain and have that attitude about a hologram above your crew.
Yes. That really irks me.
I mean, unless it's Vic Fontaine, and then I'd probably do anything for that guy.
but not Fairhaven. Not Michael Sullivan.
Yeah.
Michael Sullivan.
Yeah. I do have to say, Tristan, though,
you would,
as a holodeck program and as original episode Fairhaven, I really like this. I think it fit the Voyager crew, and it made it somewhere fun for them to go. And if it hadn't just kind of given us such a, I think, an underwhelming episode in Spirit Folk, it could have been something that they visited more often. But they have a way of kind of like killing their programs really quickly.
Yes, they do.
And it's sad because this would have been fun.
Yeah, you can't reveal to everyone in Fairhaven that, yeah, we're from a starship, because then you don't have anywhere to go with that. You can't keep revisiting that.
No. And that was already built into Vic. He's like, yeah, I know I'm light in force fields, you know. And but he was built that way. And once you introduce that Pandora's box, you can't close it with these kind of characters in Fairhaven.
Right. Well, and it gave him his charm, too. I mean, that was part of the reason you went to Vix, because you had this one character there who knew who he was and honestly felt real because of it. I mean, Vic feels as real as the Doctor from the moment you meet him, and because he's programmed to know who he is, like to have self-awareness already, which I don't know how you do that, but apparently the only person that you really want creating holodeck programs is Felix. So
he actually gets it right.
Exactly.
I would have loved to have met Felix. I wanted him to be on an episode.
That would have been great. If he was kind of like the nerdy guy and he still had glasses even in the 24th century.
I'm allergic to
retina. A 24th century hipster?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly, yeah.
He just sits back in a room. He starts, you know, with graph paper. He starts drawing things out like an old D&D map. And then he goes from there. Then he gets it into the computer. Yeah.
Turn left, open door.
But you know, Vic, I mean, yes, Vic knew that he was a hologram, and yet he's still concerned about his show times, paying his rent, you know, getting food for... He's concerned about the ordinary things, even though he knows that he's a hologram. So he was a different guy. Well, okay, so we've covered, I think, most of the important points of Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. We didn't talk about the fabricated crisis that the ship was in, where they had to get themselves out of the
shockwave.
What?
No, whatever.
I liked it.
I kind of like it when no one's going to die.
I like it when we're having a fun episode and they don't need to manufacture a drama in order to make the episode interesting. Yeah. Like every single commercial break, we're not going to think that Harry or Neelix is going to die soon. it was like they needed some sort of situation to add a little bit of drama. And so that's fine. Just throw that in. We don't care about that. It's just focus on the fun stuff.
Well, and what happens there, it's like a space hurricane. That's what I thought of, is that, you know, we got to batten down the hatches. We're just going to sit tight. We're going to be okay. And the fact that two stars collided is probably something that happens out in space, out in the galaxy. So I didn't feel like it was overly techno-babbled. It actually feels like something that's real and could happen. So, yeah, it just gives you the opportunity then to have that holodeck episode because the crew needs something to do. And so I don't feel like we're just then doing a holodeck episode because we're out of ideas, you know.
Right.
I give them this because I think it really worked really well, at least in Fairhaven.
So what we're saying is Char is wrong.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know. I think Shara and I are on the same page that I would rather them just do the Fairhaven episode because today the crew is going to go play around in an Irish village. What I feel like Voyager, when it comes to storytelling, I feel like one of the reasons why they miss the meat of real storytelling so often with situations like this is that they feel that they have to take 20 of their 42 minutes going back and forth to some kind of technobabble space situation instead of just keeping you in the real story. And that's what I felt was going on here yet again. That's why I like 1159, because they don't do that. They just tell that story.
Yes. And I'll go there with you, Chris, because I would have enjoyed more Fairhaven in the episode because I was having a great time in Fairhaven. I thought it was a really fun place to be, in the same way that, you know, you do in Vix, Bada Bing Bada Bang. You're almost all in Vix, and I love being there, and I keep wanting to be there because it's a great fun place for the crew to be, especially at that point of the series where everything is so dark. That episode was just a beacon of light and so much fun. I will concede that, Chris. That's a great point, I think.
Yeah, I felt like the whole thing with the space hurricane was just filler and a distraction from the real actual crux of the story that, even though I wasn't totally fond of it, I mean, I'm going to go along with this. I'm here for the ride. Give me more of this. This is the good stuff. Make it better. I wanted to see more Fairhaven. The other stuff was just, I felt like a waste of time, honestly. It could have been anything, anywhere, anytime.
Although, the doctor shouting, "Sinners!" was really funny. I mean,
that was cute.
Yeah, he really got into being the priest, which I thought was very funny. Because
I do like that him as the priest, he maintains his doctor sensibility.
Yes.
Where he's told that I've broken the fifth commandment again. And he says, "Satan, our fathers, and call me in the morning."
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah, that was, I love that.
Great. But I also just liked that he, the commentary on his sermon, I think he just likes listening to himself talk, you know, which we've all thought about the doctor.
And he does. We know he does.
And he does. He does. All right. Well, we're getting close to an hour. So do you have any final thoughts on Fairhaven and Spirit Folk?
Well, you know, I think one thing that we barely touched upon that I just want to make one little more comment on was that Robert Beltran was actually having fun for a change in Fairhaven. And I think it was because he kind of got to get on Kathy's case a little bit. And he kind of embarrasses her a little bit, mentioning that he embarrassed her while coming up to her and Michael in Fairhaven. Like, I noticed you were a little embarrassed when I came up to you the other day. And she can't even make eye contact. In fact, I think she deliberately turns away. I love that moment. And he's really just taking it for all it's worth.
He had been waiting for that moment.
She's like,
something of that moment. Yeah.
She's like twirling her hair and she's like, maybe. I don't really know.
I might have made a couple modifications.
I mean, he's taller and he's like smarter. And he's so like really hot. I like him a lot.
You're too good at that, Matthew.
Really, I wish the listeners could see Matthew as he is twirling his hair and bobbing his head.
Yes. Yeah, the look is as good as the audio.
Are you smacking gum there also, Matthew?
Well, like, yeah, it's delicious. I love it.
Oh, my God.
She's, like, on her pad, too. She's like, I'm totally texting him. Shut up.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, wow.
Tristan, how about you? Any final thoughts?
In regards to that scene specifically, I did like, that's actually one of my favorite moments between Chakotay and Janeway, because I feel like it's honest. I feel like it's one of those few moments where they're like, we all know that they're both attracted to each other, but they can't do anything about it. We all know that. And the people who say that that's not true didn't watch the series. Just because nothing ever happened doesn't mean that they don't have an attraction towards each other. But I like that they kind of were able to put that aside and they realized, like, we want each other to be happy. Like Chakotay was saying, like, you know, you shouldn't be embarrassed. It was fine. And she was able to completely open up to him. And even in Spearfolk, where she said, like, my boyfriend malfunctions. You know, like, Picard would have never...
Great line.
Yeah, Picard never would have said that to Riker. Or, although
Riker
Picard
might have said it to Picard, though.
Yeah, Riker might have said that to Picard. But, you know, they weren't attracted to each other. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, Jane was just like much more open, and I love these episodes for the character development of Janeway, and I love how lighthearted Fairhaven is. And I enjoy watching Spirit Folk. Is it anywhere nearly as good as Fairhaven? No, not even close. Had a lot wrong with it, but I still enjoy it because I loved Fairhaven so much, and this was like Fairhaven part 2. Now, like, it wasn't Godfather part 2. It was, you know, it was more like
Godfather 3.
Bernie's part 2, you know.
yes, very much. Or Wayne's World 2, even.
There you go. It was much more like Wayne's World 2.
Well, I guess my final thoughts on the episode are that I do enjoy it. As long as I watch it just for fun, they're just having fun in this Irish village, then it's fun. It's a nice diversion. I do agree that it feels very Voyager. I think it was well-suited to this cast and crew. Where it falls apart for me is if I really start to think about Janeway and her view of relationships. And I really feel when I watch it that it's a bad commentary on Janeway, and it portrays Janeway in a negative light and a way that I don't think that a woman who had become the captain of a Federation starship would really see things or approach things. But I'm going to take Tristan's view of it. I'm going to watch it again at some point. And when I do, I will watch it with that eye and see if I feel differently about it. So
I might have to try that too, just because I feel the same way you do, Chris. I really don't like the way Janeway handles herself in this episode. And the rest of it, I don't care.
Yeah, just remember that, you know, like look at Picard, look at Sisko, just because... you can captain a starship doesn't mean that you're good at relationships. It doesn't mean Picard's good with kids. It doesn't mean that Sisko always treats Cassidy very well. I mean, you can lead people, but still have a screwed up personal view.
Well, I think we all learned here that it's important not to let Tom Paris design your malfunctioning designer boyfriends, you know, and that if you want good holodeck characters, go to Felix. He's the one. But I'm with you, Tristan. Honestly, I think these episodes are fun. I enjoy fairy stories in general. So just the kind of background Irish fairy tale happening, that they're worried about the spirit folk, and I mean that's a big deal for Irish stories, and that background, and I kind of enjoy that. I just kind of wish they had gone more in that direction than kind of giving us the, we'll show them the real world, and it ruins all the mystique of you know, Fairhaven at that point.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm going to rate this episode, I think I'm going to give it only 4 propositions that Harry doesn't get.
I think I might give it a pint of Guinness, but a shot of Bailey's, so 1 Irish car bomb.
I'm going to give it 5 O'Douls.
Let's see. You know, this one I'm going to give 5 jars of Jameson for giving it a good go.
All right. Well, all of our ratings, except mine, I suppose, are in the spirit of St. Patrick's Day. Although the propositions did take place in an Irish village by an Irish woman. And Harry thought it was a trick question. My rating is not a trick rating. And there we go. That's Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. So before we go, Tristan, tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, as always, at TheInsaneRobin. And you can also find me talking about this very subject of Star Trek Voyager on To the Journey with the very talented and amazing Charlene Schmidt.
Wow. I love you too.
And that's right. And also, I not only have 1 talented co-host, I have 2 extremely talented and amazing co-hosts, and that lady is Lori Sears. So please tune in to the Journey.
To the Journey!
To the Journey! To the Journey!
Release day on Thursdays.
Nicely done, sir.
Member of FDIC.
We are?
It's a joke, just go.
Oh,
with
wow,
it.
Cool. Okay, that's new.
Copyright Chris Jones.
Support the Star Trek Las Vegas Fund.
Seriously, please do.
So, Matthew, tell everyone where they can find you as well.
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well at MattRushing02, along with finding me doing the book reviews at Trek FM. I also do The Orb, which is our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast with my illustrious co-host, Christopher Jones, the one and only, as well as doing Literary Treks, where we do talk literary comics, we talk books, we talk all sorts of fun things. Again, Christopher Jones is there. And for Tristan, we will try to do some Voyager comics soon.
Oh, well, don't think you need to rush to it. But yeah, maybe if you did that, more people would understand some of the references that we make constantly into the Journey.
It's true. Actually, we just need to talk, buddy.
Okay, we'll talk on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Okay.
Well, Chris, even though it's not my favorite batch of episodes, I had a lot of fun talking with you and Matt and Tristan about Spirit Folk and Fairhaven.
It was fun. I mean, we had to do it. Recording the show on St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
You know, we weren't doing DS9 this week, so we couldn't do a Miles O'Brien episode. So we had to do Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. And, you know, I mean, these are fun episodes. I enjoy them. But especially rewatching this time, Janeway, wow, I don't know, she really caught my attention. I really?
It was something.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
It was something.
I still don't know how I completely feel about that. I don't know.
I don't know. But what I do like about our Ready Room discussions is that we did get several different points of view here. And I really liked what Tristan had to say. And that's why I love doing this show, because it does help me to rethink my position on certain episodes and characters. And so now I have something new to look for the next time I watch it. And I hope the listeners got that as well.
Yes. And in fact, I may have to go back and rewatch these episodes now with Tristan's point of view, just because it's so different from my own and yours. Because I think we saw eye to eye, and Tristan and Matthew saw eye to eye a little bit. So I want to go see the other side of Fairhaven.
Yeah. Of course, that'll be after I do my rewatch of these, where I'm just doing a Neelix character study. I'm just going to focus on Neelix in these episodes. Mm. And then I'll go back and rethink my view of Janeway.
Are his little mini Neelixes are involved in this? The ones he keeps in the kitchen to be on the bikes?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. You know, I'm probably going to have to wait for the Blu-ray release and the special extended version of Fairhaven and Spirit Folk, where we do get to see the Talaxian Oompa Loompas.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I'm hoping there'll be some special features on the Talaxian Oompa Loompas. Maybe some special commentary, a little featurette, if you will. I'd be really pleased if they go for that.
I'm sure it's going to be there. I'm very confident because, I mean, it's one of the highlights of season 6.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like, how can they not? But, you know, just in case, Brennan Braga, if you're listening, buddy, get on that. Work on commentary for that after you're done with Enterprise. I know you're a little busy right now.
All right. Well, let's tell everyone where they can contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Fairhaven or Spirit Folk or anything we talked about in news today. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And if you want to have a deeper discussion, you can also go to our site and visit our new forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the Ready Room. There's also a section there for Voyager. And you can talk to us there, talk to other listeners, and discuss Fairhaven, Spirit Folk, or whatever you like.
Yeah.
And you can also, of course, find us on Twitter under username TrekFM. Now, Char, what if people want to find you personally?
You can find me all over the interwebs. You can find me, of course, on TrekFM. And you can find me on Twitter at OhTheProfanity.
And I believe, as you said this week, they can also find you over with friend of the show, Jenny Zell, on her show, Mouthy Broadcast.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I had a wonderful time with the broads tonight. And yes, you can find that show probably in a couple of weeks, a good time. And of course, you can find me on To The Journey with my very flattering co-hosts. I love you too, Tristan.
He was really buttering you up there tonight, wasn't he?
Man, yeah, he was. It was very nice. Yes, he's a very nice guy. And I love him just as much, and I love Lori, too. We have a very good time doing that show. So catch us there. We talk anything and everything, Voyager.
It's a great show. Yeah, I really enjoy it as well. All right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is CBrianJones, and that's Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. You can find me elsewhere here on Trek FM, as Matthew mentioned at the end of the feature, doing Literary Treks, where we talk books and comics, and The Orb, where we talk Deep Space Nine. And those come out every week, Literary Treks on Sunday and The Orb on Monday.
Yes. Both very fun.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun with those. We'd also like to invite you to check out our sponsor, Squarespace. I really promise you, you're going to love Squarespace. I have been a Squarespace user for 5 or 6 years now. It's a fantastic platform. Whether you want to do a personal blog, whether you want to do a large website for your company, or now even if you want to set up a web shop and sell products, it's really easy with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK3 to get 10% off. And you can try it absolutely free for 14 days and see if you like it. And I know you will. And then you can use offer code TREK3.
Yeah.
Well, Char, I guess that wraps up another Ready Room. I've got to hurry down to Sullivan's because it's almost my turn to arm wrestle the monkey.
Oh, man. Well, you better not be late, because he gets very temperamental about that. And he will use that to his advantage.
He really does. After he's got a few pints in him, you gotta watch out.
Oh man, yeah, you don't want to see the monkey after he's had a few pints of Guinness. He gets pretty loud and obnoxious, and I tell you what, after a little bit of alcohol gets in his veins, he does have, like, super monkey strength. I mean, it's just insane what the guy can do. He looks small, but, yeah, that arm.
Yeah, size can be deceiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can hold on a lot longer than you think. So, while you're out on Sullivan's, I think I'm going to go out and have a little pint of McGinnis as well. And so I think it's time to stick a horseshoe in it, because the ready room is done.
It's gonna be a fine night, you know. The Guinness is flowing like beer, which makes sense. So
hey,
it's gonna be
have
a good
some
night.
Baileys for a shot there.
That's right.
For a car bomb.
I wish I did. Oh, I do it. Mm. I do it. I do it for you, lass. It'd be great. A grand, you know, just grand. Chris is gonna put this all at the end. I know it.